We all give thanks this time of year, unless you happen to be a white-tailed deer. In your case, here's a recommendation. Check out of state kin for a week's accommodations. That's good advice. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross, lurching into your day with news, views, and personalities engaged in the abundant arts, culture, and humanities of Western Wisconsin. Well, we broke out of the studio this week for a couple on-location experiences. We sat in the back room at Ray's Place, the Eau Claire Water Street watering hole and sustenance canteen, to hear about the history and meet the people carrying on traditions started by the guy whose name's on the front. We'll hear about the Heidi Center's continuing chronicle of how to be an entertainment venue in the age of COVID and what's planned for the new year. I was curious about where one can play Coob in the winter, and I learned a whole lot more in the Coob capital of North America. And let's get the show on the road with my other road trip conversation. The Star Wars entertainment phenomenon propelled several acting careers, made some people boatloads of money, and was part of childhood and adolescence for an entire generation. Through the end of the year, the Chippewa Valley Museum features a traveling exhibit containing hundreds of collectible pieces, certain to provoke exclamations like, "I had one of those!" I strolled the exhibit with museum communications specialist Olaf Lind, after which we sat for a chat. Here's another phenomenon that I'd like to get your take on. Museums like libraries have evolved, obviously. What are some of the ways that technology has provided new avenues for museums to reinvent themselves and evolve?
Technology has offered us the ability to reach beyond the boundaries of our walls. So when all of a sudden everybody's looking for things to do video conference-wise, whether it's Zoom or Teams or whatever you're using, you don't have to convince people they want to do it on that thing. So you can just develop the content. You can have the great conversation or presentation. And so it's allowed us to move beyond the peninsula we're sitting on and talk to people sort of all over the world.
But also in how you present things.
Absolutely, how we present things. You know, we're installing, you know, more monitors. We're installing more things that are interactive. We have sensors that make sounds go off. Anything we can do to sort of immerse people and get them to have a fuller experience is great.
My experiences and how I felt while engaging in museums years ago as a kid made me wonder how often going through a museum also triggered nostalgic feelings. One would have to be a contemporary of what's on display for something in that display to cause an emotional reaction. And in the case of Star Wars, people who were young and hungry for sci-fi back in the late 70s and 80s are going to feel some nostalgia. Now, my two older kids, who are now grown, were young then. Now, after having seen the display, it did bring back a flood of mental images for me, things like Halloween costumes and Christmas gifts, which, if you were a parent back then, just had to be something Star Wars. So that's kind of an interesting take. I don't know where I'm even going with that, but museums are about history, but they can be about nostalgia if you lived through what's on display.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have a connection, you know, there are things that I experience, you know, walking through the exhibits on a daily basis that remind me of my grandparents. So I wasn't necessarily directly experiencing that thing in its own time, but I was experiencing my grandparents' experience of that thing or sharing it with them when I was visiting. You know, I have an emotional response that is part nostalgia, part, gosh, I remember hearing about that. You know, a lot of times people who have enough of their own experience are going to experience museums in a very different way than young people. But I watch the young people coming through the museum and I see their eyes light up and I see the sort of questions that they're asking their parents or their grandparents. And they're definitely getting something out of it that does resonate in a deep place.
I love watching kids go through museums and the moment they see something and realize, and it's nice to be older for me now, that at one time life was a bit harder. I didn't come over anywhere in a Conestoga wagon. However, I did experience life in a slower lane. And for kids to realize that there was that slower lane, it's fun. You must hear those comments all the time.
We do. We hear that a lot. We love to see the number of people coming through that are in intergenerational groups. Kids coming through with their grandparents and the conversations that it facilitates are absolutely amazing.
I read the line, acts, ideas, and events that shape our region. I think that's in some sort of definition of the Chippewa Valley Museum. And sometimes those acts, ideas, and events are global and even, in the case of why we're here today, interstellar. Of course, that's what Star Wars was and is. And the moment I wrote that sentence, I said, you know, you just can't use the word was when referring to Star Wars. It's almost as if it's going to be around forever. So now you're of the age where Star Wars was part of your adolescence or childhood.
Yeah, it was part of my early childhood for sure. I remember really, really, really wanting the Millennium Falcon. It's a big toy.
Did you get it?
No, I did not. I did not. Friends, you know, that's the best thing about toys and sort of these sorts of things is you start to remember gathering at friends' house and you'd bring your things and they'd bring their things and all of a sudden you've got a room full of another galaxy.
We're in the Chippewa Valley Museum and we have already walked through the Star Wars Nostalgia Awakens exhibit, which is up through December 31st. And you're going to see, I had one of those. And like Olaf said, I wanted one of those. And it'll be interesting to note whether you got over the disappointment or not. I think Olaf did. Olaf Lind, a communication specialist at the museum, is our guest. And we're sitting, where are we sitting?
We're sitting in the Farmhouse Theater, which is being at this moment redone to have a new show in it, hopefully coming in the next year.
Star Wars is a phenomenon that's almost too large to imagine or define. In fact, I discovered there are different camps as to how to watch the films, and there's lots of them. Some even dispute the wisdom of watching them in chronological order. There's a thing called the Machete Order. There's a thing called the Rinster Order. It's where someone decided on the best way to watch, I guess for the best effect. Because Star Wars was weird to begin with because it started with like Chapter 4. Many think that that's strange that it started with Episode 4. Bit more of a history. It started in 1977. Who knows where Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and George Lucas, now a billionaire, would be today without it. There was a TV series, too, which I didn't know. Were you a fan of that?
I remember watching the Ewoks cartoon.
So let's talk about the exhibit. In fact, after you and I walked through it, I thought that I had taken a look over the weekend of everybody and everything that was involved with Star Wars. Go figure, I had forgotten completely about Jabba the Hutt, and I saw him in there. Is that a him?
I believe so.
I'm testing you with all
right.
These questions.
Right.
This is a really good exhibit of stuff.
It's a really pretty cool exhibit. It's the Kenner Star Wars toys from 1978 to 1985. The action figures and then many playsets are on display. And you get characters and vehicles from the original trilogy. So Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi.
And who's the gentleman whose exhibit this is?
The curator of the exhibit and the collector is Jared Roll. He's the executive director at the Monroe County Historical Society in Sparta. You know, if you go and you visit the exhibit's website, it sounds like most was collected later on in his life. So as an adult, he and his brother had toys from the Star Wars universe when they were kids, and he sort of reignited and he began collecting them and putting together this really cool exhibit that travels lots of places to be seen.
Now, Jared's going to be here for an event on December 7th. Tell us about that.
Jared is going to be presenting remotely.
Remotely, yes.
He will be presenting, and you can come. There's a number of spaces to come and experience that at the museum.
Okay.
So we'll have the auditorium set up, and then you would be able to see the exhibit during the time that you're here.
Okay. And you're also having another program on the 18th, a space-based program, it's called.
So on December 18th, Professor Bill Wolf is the director of the UWEC Planetarium, and he's going to do a program called From Death Star to Death of Stars. And really, I think he's going to be talking about the endpoints of stellar evolution and the related astronomical phenomenon.
Wow.
And so We'll have to find out what that means exactly, but he's going to be doing a really cool presentation.
Do you get anything if you are wearing anything Star Wars, like one of those old Halloween costumes?
Do you get anything?
Do you get anything like a Tootsie Roll Pop?
Unfortunately, at this time, no.
No.
We haven't set that up. But if you were going to be part of our gingerbread competition, you need to register by November 20th.
So this is a gingerbread house?
It's a gingerbread house contest and display. If you look into the rules of all of that, there will be some special category for Star Wars-shaped gingerbread creations.
There's one other thing that I have in my notes of something related that's going on, and that is family activities, of which there are three remaining. What's up with that?
So those are really fun nights. There's lots of other organizations that are coming and having activities available. Okay. Pablo Center has brought fairly large robots that kids can look at and see, pick up balls and put them in a hoop. Children's Museum is here doing an activity where you're making a planet out of color and shaving cream. You can decorate a cookie that looks like a Wookiee or other Star Wars sort of thing and eat that, a Wookiee cookie decorating. We have some Star Wars related reading material that we have on display from the public library. So just lots of stuff to do on that day, as well as enjoy the exhibit.
It's called Star Wars, The Nostalgia Awakens. It's an exhibit at the Chippewa Valley Museum up through the end of the year, December 31st. It was fun to research all this stuff. In doing so, I didn't realize that Star Wars is called a space opera. There's no singing in it, is there? Is there a Star Wars the musical? Was that ever done?
That would be fabulous, wouldn't it?
It would.
Yeah.
To find out that some of those people can sing. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Right.
Olaf Lind, the force be with you.
Thank you, and also with you.
All righty. The website is cvmuseum.com, and Olaf brought up the gingerbread thing. Couple days yet to get your gingerbread house project registered. Click on Museum Events, and you'll have fun. Coming up, the history of a favorite place, Heidi Happenings, and next, we'll toss out some Coob information. Thank you for being in the audience on this week's edition of Spectrum West. Eau Claire's been on the North American, or has been the North American Coob capital for about 10 years now. The game is found around the region at picnics, family reunions, and outdoor tournaments. But my original curiosity was, how can someone play Coob in the winter? So I called Eric Anderson, the director of our national tourney and a guy who helped plant Coob seeds just after moving here in 2007. Well, you'll learn a lot more than just where to play the game indoors in this conversation recorded earlier this week. If one reads about or watches videos, which, by the way, I have coined CoobTube, Eau Claire's love affair with Coob, one discovers that 2007 seems like a magic year in planting Coob seeds around here. You moved here then. The first tournament was held. Elringer's farm called Coob Farm, they learned how to play that year. I'm wondering if Coob was in your luggage or the boxes you carried with you when you moved here, or how and when did you discover it? Because with a name like Anderson, it makes sense, kind of.
Yeah, totally. Actually, all my grandparents came from Sweden, so I'm 100% Swedish. And we went and visited Sweden, my wife and I, in 2002, that summer, when we got introduced to the game. We played it just a couple of times in Sweden that summer. Never really played it again. We moved to Sweden in 2005. I did a graduate program over there. Met some family, met some new friends while we were over there. You know, here we have a lot of different yard games that we play. In Sweden, they pretty much just have one. That's Coob. Hmm. So we learned how to play there. Played it a bunch of times. The last time we played was on Midsummer Eve in Sweden, in southern Sweden. We were at our friend's parents' house, which is an orchard overlooking this beautiful lake and forest and everything.
Wow.
Just absolutely just fell in love with the game. Told my dad about it, and we're originally from Rockford, Illinois. When we moved back to Rockford, Illinois to pick up our stuff that was in storage, and he had gone online and found a place to buy a Coob set. So he gave us one Coob set. From there, we moved to Helena, Montana, lived out there for about 6 or 7 months, and then moved to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, sight unseen. Never even had been here before for a job here in January of 2007. We had one Coob set, and I haven't met anybody ever here in Eau Claire that had played the game before we moved to Eau Claire in 2007.
Wow, I didn't expect that story. That's a good one. I think I've seen a photo of you standing by a lake, and it might be on your website.
Mm-hmm.
Is it primarily Swedish, or is it Scandinavian? All Swedish roots, or what?
The nickname of the game is Viking chess. So the story that the Vikings played 1,000 years ago, and I think we know that Vikings played games, but we don't know that they played Coob, and I think that's just kind of the way to sell sets or give it this kind of fun name to call it Viking chess or whatever. But the first time it's ever written, I think it was in the early 1920s in the island of Gotland out in the Baltic Sea, and that's where the world championships are held. The origins of the game pretty much are from that island. And from there, it's just kind of spread. I mean, everybody in Sweden knows the game of Coob. I call it a Nordic game. Kind of a fun story. When we moved to Eau Claire, we bought our house in 2008. And my neighbor, I said, you want to play this game? It's called Coob. And he goes, what is it? And I said, well, it's this old Swedish game. And he goes, I'm Norwegian. It's not for me. And he walked away. And I thought, we can't call it Swedish anymore. So I started calling it Nordic. I think it's fair to call it Nordic. But there's a lot of tournaments now in Germany and in Switzerland and Belgium, Czech Republic. So there's tournaments all throughout Europe now.
Okay. So we won't call it Swedish.
We won't call it Swedish. Okay. But it is from Sweden.
So between 2007 and 2011, things got serious because in 2011, it became official. Eau Claire became the capital. You have to be kind of proud that in 10 years since it became the official capital, not only has your tournament gotten bigger, and we'll talk about that in a minute. You know, if you're the capital, there's lots of stuff that you have to do. Do you envision a Hall of Fame someday? Well, there's a good question. Are there Hall of Famers, Coobers, already?
I would say that there's probably people that would meet that criteria. It's funny that you asked that question. I think over the past like 4 or 5 years, people have talked about like, oh, we should have some sort of Hall of Fame or some sort of like Hall of Recognition or something like that. So in the near future, I think that would be something that would probably come up. We've talked about how that would be housed. You know, would it be like a physical structure? You know, could it be part of another organization where they have Nordic events? But I do think it's been around long enough now that people could get recognized for what they've given to the game and or, you know, how they are as players. You know, if they've won a certain number of U.S. championships or a certain number of tournaments, they've hosted tournaments for a certain period of time, different things like that.
You better get ready to pose for your plaque. I have a Coob set, by the way, and I have to give some credit to my brother into Coob very early. He showed up at a family reunion, and I'm thinking years and years ago, people went, what the heck is that? He's way ahead of his time. Our family has known about Coob and has participated in it quite a while, but not around here. That was kind of fun. Eric Anderson on the phone with us. He directs the U.S. National Coob Championship and a bunch of other things in the North American capital. What do you call it? What is Eau Claire?
The city council passed the resolution in 2011 that we are officially the Coob capital of North America.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All things happening in the Coob capital of North America, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, folks. The national tournament, of course, Eric, gets the most ink. But talk a bit about leagues and other ways that Coob is part of our everyday lives around here, other than the aforementioned family reunions. I think lots of people now have Coob sets.
Yeah, it's a good question. Like you said, the U.S. Championship, that's the biggest, this year actually was the biggest tournament in the world here in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and normally it's one of the top probably 3 or 4 biggest in the world. But leagues play a big part of that as well as just giving people that, you know, competitive opportunity or just recreational or both. And Eau Claire is home to the Eau Claire Coob League. You know, my understanding, it's the largest weekly Coob League on the planet. And there's other leagues in the Twin Cities, down in the Milwaukee area. There's leagues in Madison, Northern Illinois. The vast majority of them are in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But it's a great opportunity. For like the Eau Claire Coob League, we play a spring and fall league outside. In the winter, we play an indoor volleyball facility. So it's 3 sand volleyball courts, and they put a dome over it at a local bar in town. And it's just a great opportunity for people to play more. And for the people that are super competitive, it gives them an opportunity to compete, you know, at least here in Eau Claire at a world-class level. A huge number of the top teams in the country are from Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls area. So it does a lot for the growth of the game and promoting the game.
You've worked on getting kids involved. I like to call them Cooblings. Are there kid-sized sets, or do they have to play with the biggies?
There are sets out there that are smaller in size. Like if you go online and you look to buy a set, a lot of the sets that are online are a lot smaller in size than the official size. And we always recommend you buy the official size. It just makes the game a lot more fun, you know, easier to play the game. So the kids play with the same size sets, but we host only kid-only tournament in the world as well. We call it Kid Coop. And that's the day before the championship, and they play with our regular sets. But they play on a pitch that's 7 meters long instead of 8 meters long. It's a little bit shorter for them, and that's for 8th grade and younger. They can play in the big tournament, too, in the U.S. championship. But we've been introducing Coupe to kids in Eau Claire since probably about 2008. We've been going to schools, you know, introducing it to them, and it's part of a lot of different PE classes here in Eau Claire.
Well, my main reason was to find out what Coupe people do in winter. But being the curious guy, I'm wondering about a game that may have evolved. I think about, and because that's big around here too, curling. And I've watched it and discovered that there was much more strategy than I imagined. Same thing in Coupe. Have we Americanized it in a way? Are there innovative ways people are, again, back to the strategies, I guess?
Yep, that's a really good question. I think probably if somebody would watch video or seen how people played in 2007, 8, 9, wherever in the world, and you watched how it's played now, you would see striking differences, you know, in the game in regards to different strategies. And those strategies have evolved over time. So yeah, as more strategies have evolved, there's only so much you can do with the game. Mm-hmm. But I think people are always trying to innovate in regards to how can they get better, how can they be more accurate. And a lot of that comes, I think, in maybe different training techniques or different practice techniques. You know, actually, you know, throwing the cubes, throwing the baton, how to raise the cubes when they're on the ground, you know, where to place the punishment cube, if there's a punishment cube in the game. Those different strategies have evolved a lot over the past 10, 15 years, for sure. Absolutely.
I brought up Coupe Farm earlier. It's kind of a neat thing. Aaron Elringer and his family, their motto is growing things and throwing things in the Coupe capital of North America. You can look that up at CoubeFarm.com, and there are other websites to go to. You also have Coupe Nation magazine. Is that strictly an online thing?
Yep, you've done your homework. Yeah, so back in, I think it was 2009, I came up with the idea to put together Coupe Nation magazine. So I think we dropped the first one of those in 2010 or 2011. In the early years, we would print off a bunch of them, put them around town, put them in the library. But right now, it's just an online magazine. And the goal of that was to really introduce people to all the wonderful and great things and innovative things that are happening with Coupe around the country. So that's on my website, wisconsincoupe.com. People can check that out. But there's tons of history over the past, you know, 10-plus years. We've been doing that magazine of different clubs and tournaments and, you know, interview of different players, different strategies. That's another thing that originated here out of Eau Claire, Coupe Nation magazine.
Cool. Another website for people to visit is usacoupe.org. And Coupe, by the way, if you're completely ignorant, like I may have been a while ago, is K-U-B-B. You wouldn't think it's pronounced Coupe by looking at that, but it is. Couple more things. The U.S. National Championship in Eau Claire is July 8th through 10th. That's next year of 2022, so put that on your calendar. So finally, Eric, people have been listening, and of course, if they live around here, they've heard about Coupe, but they may have never played it. I know the pickleball fraternity is very good at helping people get acclimated and introduced to their sport. How about the Coupe people?
Very much so. I think that's the one thing you ask 100 Coupe players, what's your favorite thing about Coupe? And I will guarantee you, well over 90% will say the people. The great thing about the game is that there's this feeling or the kind of this mantra that, you know, Coupe is for everybody. And the World Championship says Coupe unites people and creates peace on earth. And we all kind of agree with that. You know, some people may laugh at it, but we've all heard stories about how, you know, people are playing Coupe and they meet somebody new and they have a good time. And it just really brings people together. A lot of these clubs, you know, and we've done this in the past and we continue to do it. You know, we invite people to come out to Coupe League and watch. We have different Learn to Play events. Here in Eau Claire, we're part of the city block party program. So when people have a block party, they can invite us to come out and we'll teach them how to play Coupe. Mm. We go to schools and introduce them just this past week with the Eau Claire Chamber with their Leadership Eau Claire program. And we introduce Coupe to just a wide range of people. And, you know, if somebody's interested in learning how to play, I would, you know, search online and see if there's a club or organization in close proximity to them. And they'd be more than happy to introduce people to the game. And, you know, the U.S. National Coupe Championship, we're a nonprofit. We do a lot of outreach. Graham mentioned earlier, my father gave us our first Coupe set. He passed away in 2013. So we've named a program after him where we give away free coupe sets every year. We've given away well over 100 coupe sets to 50 different applicants. If people are interested in introducing coupe to their organization, that application process is actually open right now. We've actually never turned down an applicant.
There's a king in the game of coupe, and around Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Eric Anderson is kind of the king of coupe.
I get so much of the credit, but we've been so fortunate with other organizations that promote the game or invite us to do things, or local media. It truly is a wonderful game, so we really appreciate you reaching out and contacting us.
Thanks so much for being with us on Wisconsin Public Radio. We will call you every time we have a coupe question.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
There you are. There'll be a quiz. No, not really. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Big reminder, the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra presents their second concert of the season, welcoming another marvelous guest soloist. You heard her on last week's program, Eunice Kim. The concert is music of Beethoven. It will fill Pablo Center with music you won't forget. Saturday evening, 7:30 p.m., pablocenter.org for tickets. The Heide Center in Chippewa Falls continues to navigate COVID waters, making adjustments when necessary, but also trying to look as busy as it's always been. For a look at current stuff and a new year of possibilities, Executive Director Deb Johnson took my call just the other day. What we want to do eventually in this conversation is talk about 2022, but let's do some housekeeping as we're entering the holiday season. What is the COVID report from the Heide Center?
We are open. We've been working closely with the Chippewa County Public Health Department. We're really fortunate that our auditorium has movable seats. Mm-hmm. We have high ceilings. We have great air circulation. We have hospital-grade filters up in our unit up there and disinfecting and doing everything else like that. But we are at 50% of our capacity. But because of the flexibility and we have our balcony, we can do a great job of keeping people separated. We have tables and chairs we can put up there, which kind of naturally allows people to choose the people that they would like to sit with and then be nicely distance from someone else. And it also gives us some other opportunities, which we've been taking advantage of, having lunch and shows and dinner and shows and kind of that cabaret feeling, which is great because then people can bring in a beverage and watch the show. We have to remember that our mission is to provide high-quality arts and cultural opportunities for people in this area. Keeping true to our mission, people need that even more now. I just had a lady come in to buy some tickets for A Christmas Carol coming up in December. She said what so many other people have said. We really need this. We need these opportunities to get out, to socialize in a place where we feel comfortable, where we know there's distance and there's health precautions. And so we feel good because it's just been too long that we've not been able to do this live stuff as we'd like.
Yeah. The moment you relayed that story, I started singing We Need a Little Christmas in my head. I'm thinking that song might have been prophetic. We need a little Christmas right this very minute. I think I'll play that as part of this interview. It is a little different. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You tell me. When you're planning things, like for instance, we're going to get to what you're going to be doing in 2022. When you're planning things, do you have to say, yeah, well, we can do that, and here's how we'll do that? Do you automatically, when you plan an event, have in the back of your mind how the seating is going to be configured, or do you wait until the last minute because there might be new news about how we're doing? What do you do?
Before COVID, of course, we would think, okay, what if?
Sure.
But it would be more of a, you know, what if we have a way of pivoting? But boy, have I learned during COVID and the close down was one thing, but then reopening and trying to figure out our way through it. A lot of venues, the people that I've been talking to have said, you know, I didn't sign up to be a public health expert. But we have learned very quickly to have not only what we'd like to do, the optimal situation in mind, but we plan for B and C. If not this, this, to have that pivot point where we can do different things depending on where we're at the time. So when I'm booking for next year, we've been much more conservative, making sure that we're not getting in over our heads on the performance fees because we don't know what kind of capacity it's going to be. There's still high quality people, but we've been very straightforward and saying, we don't know. Here's what it is, and doing more of a, if things are much better and we have it, we're going to do a performance guarantee that may be a little bit more conservative, and then do a split, you know, either or. If it goes beyond that performance guarantee and we're selling and we can sell to full capacity, we're going to go to a split of the box office so that you don't negotiate now and then we're doing much better and that you're not getting as much as you deserve because you're the talent coming in. So we're doing a lot more of those kind of scenarios and also thinking of ways that we can effectively use. Like we're finding a lot of people are saying, you know, we'd like to do this during the week, during the day, especially in the middle of winter. We don't like to go out at night. And we like having these opportunities to come up to the theater. A luncheon show has been really getting popular, and they've been receptive. So, yeah, right now we're more conservative for next year. We're not getting as many commitments because you cannot plan ahead.
Sure.
What used to be, there were so many ticket sales ahead of time that you can kind of predict where you're going to be on the day. Now people are waiting until the last minute, so it's harder to understand whether or not it'll go. But we're trying to be faithful and supportive of the artists and raising money because we know ticket sales don't cover all this. We've been very fortunate that our community's been very supportive.
You do what you got to do. What used to be is not what is. You've talked about the flexibility that you've had and the wonderful cooperation you've had with your community, as you just mentioned, and, of course, everybody who volunteers at the Heide Center. So that's pretty cool. On the phone with Deb Johnson, Executive Director of the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls, we're getting an idea of what is, and now we're going to find out what will be. You still have some stuff coming up in 2021. Everything's still on that I'm looking at here on my list? Looney Lutherans, that's coming up the 28th of November. You have your holiday tea. In fact, Thursday, December 2nd is a big day. It has a holiday tea in the afternoon. You have your Christmas Carol sing-along. That's in the evening of December 2nd. And then all day, from noon to 7, you have the Winter Artisan Fair. And then on the 4th, Kay Sterling and the 85 Silver Band. And then December 10th and 11th, the Christmas Carol. And, of course, you have your big New Year's Eve bash on the 31st. All right. I don't have a drum. Let me see. I have a few things here.
There we go.
Hey, that's a good one. So, 2022, give us a preview.
Yeah, we have a lot of stuff coming up. We have Guys on Ice coming back, the Danielson Brothers out of Cadott. We have dinner theaters. We have lunch shows as well. It's really fun. It's really popular. It's everything that you can imagine. Lion and Kugels. It's Green Bay Packers. It's ice fishing. Guys on Ice will be here January 11th and 12th, 14th and 15th and 16th. Then we are very fortunate to be bringing in the United States Air Force Band, Mid-America. That'll be a free concert, 29th of January. Duo Baldo. Do you remember Victor Borga?
Yes.
So he made classical music fun. An amazing performer of classical music, but he brought in fun. There's a lot of stuff in Europe where they're doing that as well. And Duo Baldo are two Italian performers who are awesome. I mean, absolutely brilliant. But they have that Victor Borga feel. A little bit of slapstick, a little bit of humor, but I mean, amazing musicianship.
I had a chance to talk with Victor once, and I've seen him in concert in the bigger cities. He used to fall off his piano bench and everything.
And he never missed a beat. So it's the same thing here. They've just polished it up and made it more modern, you know, because they'll pull in modern music right into the classical. It's just going to be wonderful. We also have a Valentine's dinner and show for those people who really want a nice, wonderful four-course Italian meal here at the center and then go in and have prime seating for this great group.
That show is mid-February?
It's actually on Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay. 14th.
Michael Scales is a nephew of the blues great B.B. King, who does his own kind of dive bar soul, which is a mix of soul and blues and pop music, Motown. Mm-hmm. And he'll be coming in on February 26th. Then at the end of February, we have Freedom Songs, which is the Bright Star Theater Company, Sunday the 27th of February. And they are going to talk about the black experience, the music that they used during the time of slavery up until ragtime and jazz and R&B and up to the civil rights music, and how those songs really helped carry that movement on. That's going to be a great insight. Jackie Robinson will be here on Monday the 28th, not himself, of course, but to play an extraordinary man. So that's at, right at the end of February.
Okay.
Jig Jam, Bluegrass with an Irish tinge, is coming in on March 11th. Then Jerry Way is with Fingers Crossed. It's been canceled twice already.
Yes.
His musical Hot Off the Press. Everybody's been ready for 2 years, so he's got that whole cast, and everybody's got everything memorized. That is going to be at the end of March, the 24th through the 27th.
Okay. Yeah, man, that's some good stuff. Is everything already posted or will be posted on your website?
We're in the process of launching 2022. We have other things that are coming up,
sure,
that we do with our community. Some of them are annual, the Chi High Jazz Jam and those kind of things. Continue to do those. But these are some of the ones that we want to just bring out some incredible diversity and ideas into the Chippewa Valley.
So how soon will someone be able to go to CVCA.net and get details and plan their first part of the year?
Within the next week or two.
Okay. Well, congratulations. Good for you. Good to have the Heidi back. Good to have Deb Johnson talking in positive terms. We all know how flexible you have been, and everybody who runs entertainment venues in Western Wisconsin, in fact, all over America have been. Thank you for that, and keep up the great work. WPR is where you can yell about it.
WPR has been a great supporter of the Heidi Center for the Arts, and we love working with you.
I promised I'd get this in.
We may be rushing things, but take the holes again now. Are we feeling Christmas right this very minute? Candles in the window, carols at the spinet. Yes, we need a little Christmas right this very minute. We need a little Christmas now.
This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to be with you. The address is 838 Water Street. That may not ring a bell, but the name on the building might. Ray Petrick died in 2009, and his youngest son Dave's name has been on the deed since 1989, but the name on the building remains Ray's Place. Now, even if you're a teetotaler, you may have crossed the threshold for one of the famous sandwiches, horseradish mustard soups, or seasonal Spanish stew. I visited Ray's Place the other day, and I shot the breeze with Dave Petrick, his wife Sandy, and sister Sue Johnson. Dave, you're the youngest, and of course we all know that youngest in families have it easier. They're kind of spoiled. Was that true, Sue?
That's very true.
How was he spoiled?
After mom having 8 kids, I think by then she's just like had enough and said, let him do what he wants.
Now, the article that I read that's on the wall out there talked about a couple of things that you guys had to do as kids. What, you had to stock the coolers and bag ice? What else did you have to do as kids? Was your dad more of a taskmaster than that?
Yeah, he was. He always had, we had the ice business in town here, too. So we all had to bag ice. And we delivered it in a half-ton pickup truck and or van to Augusta, to Mondovi, Chippewa, Bloomer.
So I am really trying to imagine a family of 10 living upstairs. Describe the physical plant upstairs. What does it look like up there?
Well, there was 5 bedrooms. I never got one until, being the last, I only had the couch. I never got a bedroom until my sister Trudy moved out. I never had a bedroom.
See, now we're starting to feel sorry for him. Before, we thought he was spoiled. Not cramped? Didn't feel cramped when you were kids?
We didn't know any different.
What about the neighborhood? Where did you guys play? Did you go to a park? What?
In the pit. Right down here, we had our own rail yard, vacant lot between two buildings. And
that's all kids need is a vacant lot.
But as far as Kaiser Field, before Hobbs Ice Center was there, that was Kaiser Field. So we had ice skating.
Half Moon Lake swimming in the summer.
There was plenty of places around here.
So now with Christmas coming up, the holidays, what was Christmas like in the household?
Every year, Santa came to see us on Christmas Eve. And as kids, Mom would make supper, and we would eat supper. Dad was still in the bar getting it closed down, 6 o'clock-ish. We'd hurry up and eat supper, and we hurry up and did the dishes, and then we would pace waiting for Santa. And we knew Santa would come when Dad came up. Yep. And Dad always kind of came up late, but sure enough, as soon as Dad came up, Santa came up the front door with the big bag of toys. And so we got to see Santa on Christmas Eve.
So you had a nice big tree in the living room. And mm-hmm. We got the number of bedrooms. What else did the place look like? Living room? Did you have a dining room?
Kitchen, dining was together. It was just one room.
Okay.
It was long. Living room in the front with one bedroom, and that was where the girls were. And then you had, the entrance from the front was kind of there, and then the kitchen. And then there was one little bathroom
mm-hmm.
that we all shared. And then that hallway to the back where the other bedrooms were in the laundry room.
And our kitchen table was a picnic table.
You
know, with the full bench.
You're smart.
For Micah and everything.
So you were kind of like the Waltons.
Yeah.
Huh? Sure. Yeah. Don't be late for dinner or you're not going to get any. That's for sure.
But when your parents first moved out there and had a few children, they rented that apartment back there. So it was actually two apartments at one point. Because the laundry room is a kitchen.
Right.
Their mother, Betty, used to have to peel potatoes during the stew season and stuff like that. So it was a regular kitchen.
When did you guys meet?
In high school.
82?
Yeah. We met working at Water Street McDonald's.
That's a good place to meet.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of couples. No, I haven't heard that. So you, did you think it was cool that his dad owned a bar?
I guess I never thought too much about it.
So you're telling me that this guy was the reason you...
Yeah, it was the guy.
Oh, how do you feel about that, huh? She ever told you that?
Nope.
So Sandy brought up Betty, your mom, and I have a feeling that throughout all the notoriety and the bar's name and things, you know, she didn't get a lot of the credit for stuff. So let's talk about her a bit. You brought up peeling potatoes. It's not the easiest life being married to a guy who's downstairs running a bar. What was Mom like?
She was great.
Did she go down to the bar, or did she didn't? She wasn't a bar
person.
She
always had to help out. Well, lunches. Mm-hmm. We had water pipes that were exposed, and anytime Dad got overwhelmed, he had a little brass thing, and he would hit the water pipe, and that meant, you know, Mom, I need some help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
also he used that if we were rambunctious upstairs.
Yeah.
And we knew that we had to stop or he would be up.
Sure, but you must have had recourse then, though. What were you able to do when the bar was too noisy? What did you bang on?
Right. Good point.
But you didn't?
No.
There wasn't the music, the jukebox at that time. It was more of a quieter conversation.
He had a jukebox, but he kept it low.
Yeah.
He never had live music.
No.
How about fights? Every once in a while, I'll bet, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Was Dad good at putting those down?
Yeah.
Was he a big guy?
No.
Short
squat, you know. Yeah. But he was...
He had a bark.
Oh, yeah. He was smart enough to take care of it before it escalated.
We're sitting in the back room with Sandy, Sue, and Dave, the back room at Ray's Place on Water Street, another one of the iconic places in the Chippewa Valley. All right, so where did your dad learn the trade? How did he know how to run a bar?
Well, Grandpa Charlie had a bar down in Independence, Wisconsin.
His dad?
Yeah, okay. His dad.
Well, there you go.
He managed to keep it open through Prohibition. But then my dad was World War II vet. Then he went to school at University of La Crosse to be a accountant. And then he just bought the bar here after that.
Okay, let's talk about the food. The food, I believe, a lot of it predated your dad. In fact, he had to buy the recipe. And I know the Hertzfelts ran the place. Are they the ones, Ernie and Vi, are they the ones that started that?
No. My parents bought the bar from Ernie and Vi Hertzfelt, but they weren't so much into the food. But before that, it was Bill's Hot Beefs.
Oh.
Bill Darrowin.
But it was a bar?
It was a bar.
What was the bar called when Ernie and Vi had it?
I believe it was Ernie and Vi's.
Well, there you go. That makes
so,
sense.
So, yeah. But it was Bill's Hot Beast before that, and Bill had the beef and the Spanish stew recipe.
Okay.
When my dad wanted to start the Spanish stew, they had to peel the potatoes and stuff upstairs. They had to pay Bill Darrow and his wife a month's salary to teach them how to make the Spanish stew.
So when Ernie and Vi had it,
they still had the hot beast. They didn't have the stew and none of the soups or anything like that. My dad started the soups and the ham.
And so they had to pay for the Spanish stew recipe.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Turns out to be a good investment, huh? And it's always just winter.
First Saturday in November till March, basically St. Patrick's Day.
The horseradish mustard tradition.
That also started from my dad. You know, a signature condiment to go with the sandwiches and stuff like that.
Did he make it?
Yep, well, yeah.
And you make it?
Yes.
You got that recipe too?
Yep. Those are the two recipes Sandy and I had to buy, was the Spanish stew and the mustard when we bought the bar from my folks.
So was there any competition in buying the bar, or just nobody else wanted it?
I just graduated college, CVTC,
mm-hmm.
and that's right when he was ready to sell. So all my siblings were into their careers at that point, mm-hmm. basically.
No, well, there was really nobody that was in Eau Claire.
So I'm curious, Dave, how good was your dad at handing off the baton? Looking over your shoulder, or did he kind of let you run it the way you wanted to run it?
Well, he...
I wanted to help,
well, you know?
Yeah.
He wasn't ready to retire, but he got to slow down. He just liked to come down here to help out and do different things. You know, he was always so busy. Was he ready to get done being in the bar? Mm-hmm. Sure. But he always still wanted to be part of the bar.
Well, so. I spent every weekend with him for about 2 years doing the books. He had old school books, and I had that in school too. Every single weekend for about 2 years we were together to make sure that I did it exactly how he did it. So it was perfect, all the stuff we had to go through, but he was great about it.
What do you think he'd think about the touchscreen registers and stuff now? What do you think he'd do?
No. Mm-mm.
Hell, I don't even like him.
He had a manual typewriter he would type up his monthly reports on. I had an electric typewriter.
Oh, sure.
He had a hard time with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This leads up to a good question. What in this place puts the Ray in Ray's place? Where's Ray still around? A little bit of everything other than the name?
Neighborhood Tavern. It's a little bit of independence in Eau Claire. Small neighborhood.
Are there things the way you do them now that are still part of his personality?
It all is.
So you're a chip off the old block is what you're telling me there?
Yes, he is.
Does he like electric typewriters?
He can't even type.
You didn't take typing?
No. Hmm?
All right, final question. What happens to Ray's after Dave?
Good question.
I'd like to know that.
Yeah.
You think about it, obviously. I mean, you've got 32 years under your belt. Would you like to think that Ray's place goes on for generations and generations? And if so, who do you think you can get interested in keeping all those balls rolling?
We do have two children. Both of them come down and they help, especially through this time where we're short-staffed. So we'll see. Maybe one of them will want to take over. They both know the business very well.
Then you got to put up portraits. The portrait of Ray and then a portrait of Dave. And, huh? Do you have an artist?
And Charlie.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Grandpa.
The Independence guy?
Yep.
What was his bar's name?
Charlie's.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you guys for taking time out of a busy day. It's always busy at Ray's Place. And indulging me in my curiosities. If you have lived any amount of time in Eau Claire in the Chippewa Valley, you've been to Ray's Place, and you love it for what it is. Keep up the good work, you guys, and thanks again.
Thank you very much.
I wonder where I'll go for lunch today. Give that some thought. Spectrum Memos for you. Northwood Strings, based in Hayward, holding lesson registration for students of all ages and abilities. You can learn violin, viola, cello, bass, or mandolin and participate in group classes. NWStrings.org. Hey, UW Eau Claire honors an old friend of ours, a longtime WPR volunteer and Blue Gold educator, the late Henry Lippold, in renaming studios and control rooms in Hibbard Hall. They're renaming it the Henry Lippold Broadcast Suite. That event begins Friday at 4 p.m. in Hibbard Hall. Sweet, he was. Well, the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild presents Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus, December 2nd through 12th at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. They have evening and matinee performances. Tickets at cvtg.org. A Christmas Carol, a reading by Charles Dickens, comes to the Grand Theater next Saturday, the 27th, 7:30 p.m. It's a presentation of Stage Door Unlocked Productions. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks to Kate for promotional work and to Rick for keeping an eye on things. And thank you for being in the audience. Next week, it's Thanksgiving. And instead of doing a radio show, I'm going to be doing what you'll be doing, putting on a few pounds. Visit WPR.org to listen to or load past programs. I'm Al Ross with a lot of help from a lot of other people. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Happy Thanksgiving.